भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. So today I'll be reading, as we have been reading for the last few days, from the Krishna book, which comes from the 10th canto, and which has been translated and commented upon by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And it is by Srila Prabhupada's mercy that we are sitting here today, and that we are able to have a book as glorious, as incredibly great as it is. I know from my own personal life, it has actually been a raft which is taking me across the ocean of mayic miseries, and I'm sure the same is true for all of us. It was through this Krishna book that I actually came to Krishna consciousness. I did receive a copy of the Bhagavad Gita by Brahmananda many years ago, and there was an advertisement in the back of it for the Krishna book, and then I began reading this Krishna book, and I was so enamored, so absorbed, and so overtaken by the beauty of the book, the beauty of the language, the beauty of the stories, and the effect that they had upon my heart and upon the following direction of my life, that I actually consider this book without a doubt as being non-different from Krishna, not only from the story point of view, but from the point of view of the writer who has actually presented it, as if Krishna himself were writing it. So we are very blessed to have this wonderful literature, not to speak of so many others, which are equally beneficial and equally desirable. So I will continue without any further ado. I should also thank the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna for appearing in this world approximately 5,000 years ago and performing these incredible pastimes, which we now come and we relive by hearing about them. And in hearing about them with an absorbed mind, we actually become purified through that process. Because everything that Krishna does, his name, his fame, his activities, everything about Krishna is purifying. It's purifying because he is the supreme pure. And it's like water. If you put your muddy hand in water, then the mud comes off. If we put our muddy minds in Krishna Katha, then the mud of the materialism washes off. So we are very blessed that Sri Krishna, appears personally once every 4,320,000,000 years. So it was very auspicious that just about 5,000 years ago he came, and we are still talking about him. And he will be talked about forever, because he is a forever person. A forever person is a person whose fame never dies and whose glory goes on forever. So now we'll continue the reading from yesterday. For those who were not here yesterday, an unembodied voice appeared while King Kamsa was driving the chariot in which his sister Devaki was riding and his brother-in-law Vasudeva was riding, they having just been married. This disembodied voice said, "Kamsa, do you not know that the woman whom you are driving, her eighth child, is going to kill you?" When Kamsa heard that, he became very upset, very disturbed, because he, having so many great plans, especially to become the emperor of the world, if the Supreme Lord would come to destroy him or kill him, then his plan would be wrecked. So he thought he could circumvent the plan of the Lord by simply trying or attempting to kill Devaki. So he grabbed her hair and back of it, and he was just about to cut her head off when Vasudeva, her husband, told him to halt and then began to try and reason with him. He hoped that he would be able to reason him out of it, because it was a most horrible thing that on the auspicious day of the marriage, that she should be killed, just so that Kamsa could fulfill his greedy ambitions. So we pick up now with Vasudev giving various arguments to Kamsa, giving them in a very calm and a very controlled, not in a dictatorial or not in a reproachful fashion, because if he tried that, his head would be rolling. He knew that when you're dealing with a person who's very puffed up, then you have to be very gentle, you have to be very sweet-voiced, you have to be very humble, so that they never feel that you're trying to lord it over them, because if they do, that ends it. And that's a principle that also we can all learn from Vasudeva in our own preaching, that if we learn how to deal with people who tend to be very proud or very conceited or very vain, knowing how to deal with them in a humble way, it will bring them down to a reasonable level in which you can actually discuss things. So Vasudev says, "This body is exactly like one of the bodies which we always see in dreams. During our dream of sleep, we create so many bodies according to mental creation. We have seen gold, and we have also seen a mountain. So in a dream, we can see a golden mountain by combining the two ideas. Sometimes in dreams, we see that we have a body which is flying in the sky. And at that time, we completely forget our present body. Similarly, these bodies are changing. When you have one body, you forget the past body. During a dream, we may make contact with so many new kinds of bodies. But when we are awake, we forget them all. And actually, these material bodies are the creations of our mental activities. But at the present moment, we do not recollect our past bodies. The nature of the mind is flickering. Sometimes it accepts something, and immediately it rejects the same thing. Accepting and rejecting is the process of the mind in contact with the five objects of sense gratification, which are form, taste, smell, sound, and what's the last one? Touch, yes. In its speculative way, the mind comes in touch with the objects of sense gratification. And when the living entity desires a particular type of body, he gets it. Therefore, the body is an offering by the laws of material nature. The living entity accepts a body and comes out again into the material world to enjoy or suffer according to the construction of the body. Unless we have a particular type of body, we cannot enjoy or suffer according to our mental proclivities inherited from the previous life. The particular type of body is actually offered to us according to our mental condition at the time of death. The luminous planets, like the sun, moon, or stars, reflect themselves in different types of reservoirs, like water, oil, or ghee. The reflection moves according to the movement of the reservoir. The reflection of the moon is on the water, and the moving water makes the moon also appear to be moving. But actually, the moon is not moving. Similarly, by mental concoction, the living entity attains different kinds of bodies, although actually he has no connection with such bodies. But on account of illusion, being enchanted by the influence of Maya, the living entity thinks that he belongs to a particular type of body. That is the way of conditioned life. Suppose the living entity is now in a human form of body. He thinks that he belongs to the human community, or a particular country, or particular place. He identifies himself in that way and unnecessarily prepares for another body which is not required by him. Such desires and mental concoctions are the cause of different types of body. The covering influence of material nature is so strong that the living entity is satisfied in whatever body he gets, and he identifies with that body with great pleasure. Therefore, I beg to request you not to be overwhelmed by the dictation of your mind and body. Vasudev thus requested Kamsa not to be envious of his newly married sister. One should not be envious of anyone, because envy is the cause of fear both in this world and in the next, when one is before Yamaraj, the Lord of Punishment, after death. Vasudev appealed to Kamsa on behalf of Devaki, stating that she was his younger sister. He also appealed at an auspicious moment, at the time of marriage. A younger sister or brother is supposed to be protected as one's child. The position is overall so delicate, Vasudev reasoned, that if you kill her, it will go against your high reputation. Vasudev tried to pacify Kamsa by good instruction, as well as by philosophical discrimination. But Kamsa was not to be pacified because his association was demoniac. Because of his demoniac association, he was always a demon. So what is a demon? A demon is one who makes his own laws, considers that he is God, and simply does what he wants to do. And his only concern is his own little body and how it will appear in the material world. In this case, as I said, he wants to be not just a king, but an emperor. He wants to be the highest. And a demon believes, quite unfortunately, that he is the controller of his destiny. He ignores the principle of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knows there's a Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he feels that he can do what he wants to do because he has the power to do it. Feeling the power to do it, then he feels he will, if he need be, he will kill Devaki. If need be, he will kill Vasudeva. He will kill the demigods. He will kill anyone who gets in his way in his pursuit of power, of glory, of fame, of name, of glorification. Anyone or anything who gets in his way is to be destroyed. This is demon. That's the demon mentality. And in one sense, we all have a little trace of that. We find that in ourselves. Of course, when one practices Krishna consciousness, those qualities gradually, slowly, as a result of communion and contact and devotional service, they gradually disappear. But we will, if we take stock of ourselves and introspect, we will find that we may have some of those tendencies in ourselves. But by Krishna's grace, by Srila Prabhupada's grace, by the grace of all the devotees, those qualities definitely disappear. And we all have experience of that. For some of us, an enormous amount of bad qualities have gone away. For some of us, a small amount. But rest assured that if we pursue this path, if we continue on it, if we never give it up, if we take shelter of Krishna, if we surrender to him as fully as possible, then all bad qualities disappear, and all good qualities come, as Krishna says, in one who has unflinching devotional service to the Supreme Lord. All the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods are consistently manifested. So that's all. One does not have to make a separate endeavor to develop the good qualities of a demigod or the good qualities of an advanced devotee. One simply has to pursue the path that the previous spiritual acharya, in this case Srila Prabhupada, has given us. And by following that path, it is a sure ladder straight to the development of good qualities, the development of love of God, and the direct perception of the Supreme Lord, and ultimately that perception experienced and felt and activated in the divine world or the spiritual world. So this is So now we understand, you see, this demon, a demon always thinks that he can control material energy. And he thinks that it is by his endeavor that things are happening rather than by the laws of nature acting upon him. He thinks he's above the laws of nature. In the case of Kamsa, he actually could defeat certain demigods. Consequently, he had the feeling that no one can defeat me. And he totally forgot that there was Lord Vishnu who would eventually, as we will find out later on, defeat him. So, continuing from where I left off. Vasudeva tried to pacify Kamsa by good instruction as well as by philosophical discrimination. But Kamsa was not to be pacified because his association was demoniac. Because of his demoniac associations, he was always a demon, although born in a very high royal family. A demon never cares for any good instruction. He is just like a determined thief. One can give him moral instruction, but it will not be effective. Similarly, those who are demoniac or atheistic by nature can hardly assimilate any good instruction. Sometimes it is said it's like throwing pearls to swine. They don't know the value of the pearls. Consequently, they just walk all over them. Sometimes in our preaching, we will find that we will offer the pearls of Krishna conscious philosophy, and people will flout it, they will ignore it, they will neglect it, they will practically spit on it, and that's because they are demoniac. That is what is being stated here. Similarly, those who are demoniac or atheistic by nature can hardly assimilate any good instruction, however authorized it may be. That is the difference between demigod and demon. Those who can accept good instruction and try to live their lives in that way are called demigods. And those who are unable to take such good instruction are called demons. Failing in his attempt to pacify Kamsa, Vasudeva wondered how he would protect his wife Devaki. When there is imminent danger, an intelligent person should try to avoid the dangerous position as far as possible. But if, in spite of endeavoring by all intelligence, one fails to avoid the dangerous position, there is no fault on his part. One should try his best to execute his duties. But if the attempt fails, he is not at fault. So, in effect, Srila Prabhupada is saying that if we try our very best, but still the attempt fails, and difficulty or trouble or problems or sorrow results, don't feel guilty about it. You did your best. You asked Krishna for guidance and help, and whatever resulted is what resulted. So, wallowing in guilt only weakens us. It actually degrades us, because there was really nothing to feel guilty about in this case. Vasudeva thought of his wife as follows. For the present, let me save the life of Devaki. Then later on, if there are children, I shall see how to save them. He further thought, if in the future I get a child who can kill Kamsa, just as Kamsa is thinking, then both Devaki and the child will be saved, because the law of providence is inconceivable. But now, some way or other, let me save the life of Devaki. There is no certainty how a living entity contacts a certain type of body, just as there is no certainty how a blazing fire comes in contact with a certain type of wood in the forest. When there is a forest fire, it is experienced that the blazing fire sometimes leaps over one tree and catches another by the influence of the wind. Similarly, a living entity may be very careful and fearful in the matter of executing his duties, but it is still very difficult for him to know what type of body he is going to get in the next life. Maharaj Bharat was very faithfully executing the duties of self-realization, but by chance he contacted temporary affection for what? Yes, a deer. And he had to accept his next life in the body of a deer. Vasudev, after deliberating on how to save his wife, began to speak to Kamsa with great respect. Although Kamsa was the most sinful man, sometimes it happens that a most virtuous person like Vasudev has to flatter a person like Kamsa, a most vicious person. That is the way of all diplomatic transactions. Although Vasudev was deeply aggrieved, he presented himself outwardly as cheerful. He addressed the shameless Kamsa in that way because he was so atrocious. Vasudev said to Kamsa, "My dear brother-in-law, please consider that you have no danger from your sister. You are awaiting some danger because you have heard a prophetic voice in the sky. But the danger is to come from the sons of your sister, who are not present now. And who knows, there may not be sons in the future. Considering all this, you are safe for the present. Nor is there a cause of fear from your sister. If there are any sons born of her, I promise that I shall present all of them to you for necessary action." Kamsa knew the value of Vasudev's word of honor, and he was convinced by his argument. For the time being, he desisted from the heinous killing of his sister. Thus, Vasudev was pleased and praised the decision of Kamsa. In this way, he returned to his home. So this is a very instructive event. It means that when we're in difficulty, when we're in trouble, we should fight tooth and nail to try and get out of it. Not just say, "Oh well, that's just Krishna's mercy. I'll just take it." No, sometimes we have to fight it, and that's the test. And then sometimes, if it's too overwhelming, we just have to bear it. Therefore, one has to discriminate as to what one must do in such a circumstance. In this case, since the obligation or the responsibility of a man to his wife is that he is to protect her. And his protection, in the case of Vasudev, is perfect because he was able to talk Kamsa out of beheading his own wife. And in so doing, Devaki's life was saved. So it's very important that we have to use our reason, as Vasudev did in this case. After due course of time, Vasudev and Devaki gave birth to 8 male children, as well as 1 daughter. When the first son was born, Vasudev kept his word of honor and immediately brought the child before Kamsa. It is said that Vasudev was very much elevated and famous for his word of honor, and he wanted to maintain this fame. Although it was very painful for Vasudev to hand over the newly born child, Kamsa was very glad to receive him. But he became a little compassionate with the behavior of Vasudev. This event is very exemplary. For a great soul like Vasudev, there is nothing considered to be painful in the course of discharging one's duty. Why? Because it is loving service to Krishna. That is what our duty is. It is not merely something we do, but it is something we do to please Krishna, to serve Krishna, to honor Krishna. So if Krishna is the object of our service, then we should be ready and willing at any given moment to give up our bodies if need be. And that's exactly what he was willing to do. He brought his child. He was willing to give up the child if need be, since he had made the promise. And if Kamsa wanted to kill him, he was willing to give up his body if need be. Of course, Vasudev, being the person he is, he probably could have out-argued him and kept his life. For a great soul like Vasudev, there is nothing considered to be painful in the course of discharging one's duty. A learned person like Vasudev carries out his duties without hesitation. On the other hand, a demon like Kamsa never hesitates in committing any abominable action. It is said, therefore, that a saintly person can tolerate all kinds of miserable conditions of life. A learned man can discharge his duties without awaiting favorable circumstances. A heinous person like Kamsa can act in any sinful way, and a devotee can sacrifice everything to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kamsa became satisfied by the action of Vasudev. He was surprised to see Vasudev keeping his promise, And being compassionate upon him and pleased, he began to speak as follows. So it says he of course, he knew that Vasudeva was a person who kept his vows and promise. But on the other hand, it is not easy to give up your firstborn child. There is so much love that takes place when you have that child that it's almost inconceivable that you will hand the child over for being killed, murdered. It appears that Kamsa was expecting, although he knew Vasudeva was good for his word, that he was expecting that perhaps, maybe, he would take the child and try to escape someplace else, which he does do with Krishna later on. My dear Vasudeva, Kamsa says, you need not present this child to me. I am not in danger from this child. I have heard that the eighth child born of you and Devaki will kill me. Why should I accept this child unnecessarily? You can take him back. When Vasudeva was returning home with his firstborn child, although he was pleased by the behavior of Kamsa, he could not believe in him because he knew that Kamsa was uncontrolled. An atheistic person cannot be firm in his word of honor. One who cannot control the senses cannot be steady in his determination. The great politician, Chanakya Pandit, said, never put your trust in a diplomat or a woman. So we're talking about materialistic women, not women who are on the spiritual path, because they know the value of the word. Those who are addicted to unrestricted sense gratification and can never be truthful, nor can they be trusted with any faith. At that time, the great sage Narada came to Kamsa. He was informed of Kamsa's becoming compassionate to Vasudeva and returning his firstborn child. Narada was very anxious to accelerate the descent of Lord Krishna as soon as possible. He therefore informed Kamsa that personalities like Nanda Maharaj and all the cowherd men and girls and the wives of the cowherd men in Vrindavan, and on the other side, Vasudeva, his father Shurasen, and all his relatives born in the family of Vishnu of the Yadu dynasty, were preparing for the appearance of the Lord. Narada wanted Kamsa to be careful of the friends and well-wishers and all the demigods taking birth in those families. Kamsa and his friends and advisors were all demons. Demons are always afraid of demigods. After being thus informed by Narada about the appearance of the demigods in different families, Kamsa at once became alert. He understood that since the demigods had already appeared, Lord Vishnu must be coming soon. He at once arrested both his brother-in-law Vasudeva and Devaki and put them behind prison bars. So Narada wanted them to give birth to a child every year, or even sooner if possible. So, here we have a baby that has been born, and Kamsa has not killed the child. Therefore, there may not be another child every year. Vasudeva and Devaki may decide, let's just leave it at that, with just one child, because if I have eight child, the eighth is going to be killed. So, that possibility was there. So Narada Muni wanted to make sure there was an eighth child and that the prophecy would be fulfilled. Because the first six child, there was a curse on them, which had come from Hiranyakashipu. He had cursed them long, long ago. So those five had to take birth, and then after that, Krishna and Balaram would take birth. So Narada wanted to expedite this. Now, we have to understand that this is a very, very trying time for Devaki. Because what's going to happen now is that Kamsa, as we know, will kill that firstborn as a result of the urgings of his ministers and counselors. Now, why would any woman in her right mind want to have another child, knowing that that child, which he has so much love for, will be killed? Not easy. Very difficult, and it shows the greatness of Devaki, that she was able to put the benefit of the world ahead of her own personal consideration. Our own personal consideration is, I don't want any more children because they're only going to be murdered. But considering the fact that if she doesn't have children, then the eighth won't come, and the eighth, who is Krishna, who is going to redeem the entire world, then the whole world will be cheated out of that great benediction. Therefore, she was able to put her own personal self-interest aside for the benefit of the world. And in so doing, what happened is that we're sitting here today receiving that benefit in the form of this incredibly great book. Just consider it. It's an incredible sacrifice for any woman to make. Okay. Within the prison, shackled in iron chains, Vasudeva and Devaki gave birth to a male child year after year. And Kamsa, thinking each of the babies to be the incarnation of Vishnu, killed them one after another. So how could that be? Well, it just happened to be in some other texts you'll find this, that if it says that he would be the eighth, well, it depends on how you count. If you count from the first comes, then the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, sixth, then the eighth one would be the one who is coming to kill him. But if you count from the eighth to the seventh, the sixth, the fifth, the fourth, the third, and the first, if you count backwards, then the first one could be the one to kill him. Or if you count from the third, then you go from the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, one, two, three. It could be any one of them. That's how Kamsa reasoned. So he wasn't going to take any chances. He's not going to wait for the eighth person, the eighth child to be born. He was particularly afraid of the eighth child, but after the visit of Narada, he came to the conclusion that any child might be Krishna. Therefore, it was better to kill all the babies who took birth of Devaki and Vasudeva. This action of Kamsa is not very difficult to understand. There are many instances in the history of the world of persons in the royal order who have killed father, brother, or a whole family and friends for the satisfaction of their ambitions. There is nothing astonishing about this, for the demoniac can kill anyone for their nefarious ambitions. Kamsa was made aware of his previous birth by the grace of Narada. He learned that in his previous birth, he was a demon of the name, anybody remember? Yes, his name was Kalanimi. And that he was killed by Lord Vishnu. Actually, Kalanimi, he threw a spear at Lord Vishnu while he was sitting on the on his carrier, Garuda. And it was headed for Garuda. So the Lord caught it and flung it back at Kalanimi and killed him. Having taken his birth in the Bhoj family, he decided to become the deadly enemy of the Yadu dynasty. Krishna was going to take birth in that family, and Kamsa was very much afraid that he would be killed by Krishna, just as he was killed in his last birth. He first of all imprisoned his father, Ugrasena, because he was the chief king among the Yadu, Bhoj, and Andaka dynasties. And he also occupied the kingdom of Shurasena, Vasudeva's father. He declared himself the king of all such places. So that was the way he would deal with this problem. He would imprison Vasudeva and Devaki, imprison his father, Ugrasena, And then he would go after the demigods who had taken birth in the Yadu dynasty, who then fled to the mountains, who fled to the desert, they fled to the forest, wherever they could hide so that they would not be killed. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the first chapter of Krishna, Advent of Lord Krishna. And this ends our reading for this morning, and I want to thank you all very much for your intent attention. And I thank Srila Prabhupada for giving us this wonderful book. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. All glories to Lord Sri Krishna and Srimati Radharani ki jai. Hare Krishna. Oh, thanks for tolerating, bearing, undergoing.
What happened to your guru, Maharaj? I saw him for a day or two, and then he's
in India already.